I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon and welcome to Straight No Chaser. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and we are broadcasting live from the back of Roberta's in Bushwick, 261 Moore Street, where brunch is being served. My guest today in studio is Jean Halloran. Jean is the Director of Food Policy Initiatives at the Consumers Union, which is the organization best known for Consumer Reports. And Jean has worked on food safety and sustainability issues at the Yonkers Office of Consumers Union for the last 25 years. Welcome, Jean. Thanks a lot for making the effort to come in. I really appreciate it. It's good to see you again.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you were here in July, and you were just about to start circulating, or you had just started circulating a petition to stop feeding antibiotics to food animals. So tell us a little bit about how you got that thing going, because that was, as we discussed before, kind of an unusual program for consumers. They don't usually go so political.
That's true. And we don't actually usually go so outside the political process. You know, we'll take a stand on a bill, but we don't usually, take to the streets or go direct to the companies. We do our objective product ratings and consumers will do what they will with them. But in this case, with the issue of antibiotics, this has been before government agencies for going on 3.5 decades.
Yeah.
And we have been getting nowhere. I mean, there are powerful lobbies in Washington for the drug industry and the livestock industry who don't want to do anything to restrict the antibiotics that are being given to animals. We give 80% of the animals that are made in this country, of the antibiotics that are made in this country, go to animals, not to people. Mm-hmm. And we have a bad problem with antibiotic overuse in general, and it's leading to superbugs that are making people really sick.
Right. I mean, when you were about to deliver the petition to Trader Joe's, because this particular petition was targeted directly to Trader Joe's, because you felt at some point, and for some reason, which I hope you'll explain, that they would be receptive to the idea of selling only meat that was antibiotic-free. So what led you to think that Trader Joe's would be receptive to that? And then what was the response when you delivered your 557,000 signatures?
Right. Well, we thought, Trader Joe's is out there. They've got a progressive image. They have some progressive policies. They sell sustainably caught fish only. They only use non-genetically engineered ingredients in their store brands. So we thought, they ought to be, perhaps they'd be willing to listen on this topic.
Right, and this would be a nice marketing ploy for them as well. I mean,
exactly.
It's another reason to shop there instead of, say, Whole Foods.
Right. I mean, Whole Foods is the one chain that is 100% no antibiotics.
Right.
And so we thought probably Trader Joe could do this too. They have some of these products. No pork, though. So we thought perhaps they could make the transition. So we put this petition up and worked with some partner organizations, Humane Society, Natural Resources Defense Council, Change.org. And really, we were hoping to get 100,000 signatures, and we ended up with 557,000.
Yeah, incredible.
So
clearly, consumers are on the side of getting rid of antibiotics in the food chain.
Yeah.
Very much so. And it's an issue that people are more and more aware of, I think, than, certainly they were 5 years ago.
Yes, yes. There is a lot of concern on this.
Yeah.
And so we then contacted Trader Joe's and asked for a meeting we said, could we just present you these signatures and discuss the issue? And they said no.
Flat out no.
Pretty much flat out no.
Wow. And you delivered this to the flagship store in New York.
Yes. So because we were turned down for our request for a meeting at their headquarters in Monrovia, California, we said, well, we want Trader Joe's to get this petition. So last Thursday, we went to their flagship store in New York on 14th Street. Mm-hmm. And we brought along our new mascot, who we're calling Joe the Pig. He's a life-size, human-size pig, and he wants to get off drugs.
Yeah.
So
he's sick of being a junkie. And
he really is. He wants to get off drugs. So he came with us, and so did quite a few consumers. And so we talked to media for a while about what we were doing, and then we went inside and gave the names of all the signees to the store manager. So we're hopeful that the manager will pass it on to Trader Joe's top executives in California. But we also took video of the event, and if you want to go to our website, notinmyfood.org, you can see the video, and you could actually email it to Trader Joe's headquarters yourself.
Ooh, what a great idea. I think that's excellent. And you had some, I, of course, was at the event. I mean, full disclosure here. I was at the event, and you had one really compelling speaker. I mean, a lot of everybody who spoke was compelling, but this one woman in particular who had worked in the hog industry and described how her husband had developed MRSA, which is methicillin staphylococcus aureus resistance, right? Or methicillin resistant staphylococcus aureus, sorry. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those superbugs that you talk about. And it's not clear to me, and maybe you can help us understand whether the methicillin that it's resistant to is a drug that's commonly fed to livestock, or is that just, I always think of MRSA as being a hospital-related disease, not so much on the livestock side, but I guess I'm wrong, because her husband got it from her, and so did her daughter, and they were both very, very sick.
Yes, MRSA has now become disturbingly common in hog production.
Amazing.
And among hog workers.
Mm-hmm.
How it got there, we're not exactly sure, but there was some research by Institute for Ag and Trade Policy that I believe found something like, evidence of presence of some MRSA, even at a very low level, in something like half the samples they looked at.
Oh, my God, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And do you remember, just to go on a little tangent here for a second, do you remember a couple of years ago when the hog plant, slaughter plant workers were coming down with that crazy neurological thing from inhaling pig brains?
Yeah.
That was probably also somehow related to all of this antibiotic resistance. I mean, really.
Well, maybe yes, maybe no. I mean, that one was never really, I thought,
never resolved.
But MRSA is definitely found at hog farms. A number of studies have found it there. And this woman who worked with the antibiotics all the time.
Right. She was administering the antibiotics.
Administering them. Suddenly her husband got sick with this skin. It's a skin infection that can kill you. It kills 18,000 people a year.
Wow.
It's a very serious problem.
Oh, yeah.
And the trouble is it's resistant to multiple antibiotics. So the things you would normally use to cure a bacterial infection don't work on this, and they have to escalate to more and more powerful antibiotics.
And bigger cocktails of them
bigger
also.
Bigger cocktails,
In fact, I didn't think that it was survivable. I thought people always died from MRSA, but obviously they don't, because her husband didn't die of that. He died of some other horrible thing. Let's go on for a second. Are you planning on other actions such as this? Will you be targeting other chains, grocery store chains, for example, or restaurant chains?
We're looking at the 13 largest supermarket chains. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep going to Trader Joe's stores. We've asked consumers, and if you go to our website, you can get a flyer that you can take to a Trader Joe's store.
Excellent.
And a lot of people are doing that.
That's great. I love to hear that. I was just thinking to myself that Wegmans would probably be an excellent store for you to target, because they are quite sustainably conscious, as it were. They're more progressive, I think, than many of the other chains, even though they're not maybe the biggest one. But certainly in upstate New York, there's a lot of Wegmans around.
Well, we'll think about putting them on our list.
So let's go on. Now, in my favorite reading material, which is meetingplace.com, in case you didn't know that already, folks. Congresswoman Slaughter, the Democrat from upstate New York, has continued her campaign against antibiotic use in animal agriculture by sending a detailed questionnaire to 60 fast food companies, meat producers, meat processors, and grocery chains, asking them to disclose their policies on antibiotic use in meat and poultry production. And I'm just going to read a couple of the, you know, sort of, shall we say, salient responses from some of the biggest meat producers in the country, or food producers in general. So Cargill, which I generally think of as a fairly progressive company. It's still a family-owned company. It's privately owned, I should say. Not family-owned, but privately owned. And they've been very progressive about improving their slaughtering facilities and implementing better designs, you know, with Temple Grandin, blah, blah, blah. So I think of them as being kind of cool, but no, I mean, in the scheme of things, you know, let's put it that way. But Cargill, here's their response. Cargill favors regulator policy that is science and risk-based. Okay, risk-based, you're going to have to explain that to me, and supports the stringent FDA approval process for veterinary drugs. Now, we're not talking about veterinary drugs. We're talking about human drugs used in a veterinarian setting. So what are they saying here?
Not much.
Yeah.
antibiotics used on humans do have to be approved by the vet drugs division at FDA before you use them on animals. Mm-hmm. And they're supposed to be safe for humans and animals. And that's supposed to consider whether the resistance problem will develop. But again, FDA actually proposed banning penicillin for animal use 35 years ago.
Right.
And they were blocked by the industry, who said they had to do some studies before they could do that. And then they had to do some more studies. And then when those were finished, they had to do some more studies. Mm-hmm. And after about a decade, FDA got the point and kind of gave up on trying.
Right. Certainly seems that way. Hormel said, Hormel Foods and the producers that supply hogs and turkeys to the company follow programs that meet or exceed FDA guidelines to ensure that medications are used appropriately to keep animals healthy. What are those FDA guidelines? And after all, there are guidelines, they're not rules.
That's right, they're guidelines, and they just issued them this spring.
Right.
And what they said was that everybody should try really hard not to use any antibiotics for growth promotion.
Which means putting it routinely in the food or the water as opposed to an injectable.
But there's a trick.
Okay.
You see, because there are three kinds of uses: growth promotion, disease prevention, mm-hmm. and treating sick animals.
Right.
Now, the treating sick animals, which you normally do with an injection, amounts for about 5% of all antibiotic use. The rest of it has traditionally been thought of as growth promotion, but in the wake of FDA saying that they shouldn't use these drugs for growth promotion, now we hear that actually it's all for disease prevention, which is perfectly acceptable to FDA.
Right.
So it appears that perhaps at most 10 or 15% of the drug use might be eliminated if they eliminated the purely growth promotion uses.
But the point is that they can say whatever they want to say, that it's disease prevention. And of course, animals that are in confined areas are more likely to generate disease amongst each other than animals that are out on pasture.
And tend to need a lot of disease prevention.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go on. We have like a couple minutes before we have to take a break. And then, so let's see, what was the other one that really knocked me flat here? National Beef. National Beef is one of the four largest meat processing companies in the country. They said the company supports the current FDA approval process and withdrawal time requirements for veterinary drugs and the federal residue monitoring system. Let's talk for a second about these time requirements and about the residue monitoring system.
Well, all these drugs, and we're not just talking about antibiotics. Mm-hmm. There's a drug called ractopamine, mm-hmm. Which is
They're trying to get it out of the hog industry, but I don't think it's going
yes,
anywhere.
It's quite legal to use.
They banned it, by the way, in Europe. You know that, right?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And it's related to some of these drugs that they give racehorses that are a concern. For all these drugs, you're supposed to stop using them a certain number of weeks before slaughter so that the drug doesn't end up, or it's below a tolerance, an acceptable level, in the food on the dinner plate. Well, that's important, and that's good, but it doesn't solve the problem of superbugs.
Right.
The superbugs happen way back when the animal is growing, and it selects for the drug selects for the superbugs. You can end up with superbugs on your food even if there are no antibiotic residues.
Interesting. So when we talk about superbugs, we're talking about, say, some of the new Salmonella strains that are coming out, Salmonella Newport, Salmonella Heidelberg, which was implicated in that big food, the big sprout outbreak in Germany last year, which is one of my favorite stories. I did a whole program on sprouts last week with a microbiologist because I think they should be taken off the supermarket shelves also. There's just a plethora of new strains of old diseases that are what you're referring to as superbugs. Am I right?
Yes. When you have a disease-causing organism that doesn't respond to antibiotics anymore, that's become immune to them or resistant to them, we call them superbugs because they're so hard to treat.
Sure, absolutely. Gene, we're going to take a little tiny break for a sponsor drop, and we'll be right back with Gene Halloran, who is the Director of Food Policy Initiatives for Consumers Union, the wonderful outfit that brings us Consumer Reports. Stay tuned.
Grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Here he sounds like Johnny Cash.
Yeah, really?
I guess we're back. We're back. This is Straight No Chaser on the Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer. And in the studio with me today is Gene Halloran from Consumers Union, the outfit that brings us the wonderful Consumer Reports. So, Gene, we were talking about antibiotics in the food chain, and we're going to jump right to what Consumers Union is talking about in terms of what they want to see happen in the industry, both in grocery store chains and on the industrial level. So you were talking before the show, we were talking a little bit about labeling and trying to get stores to, at the very least, label meats that are antibiotic-free or meats that contain antibiotics. How do you think that's going to play out? Do you think stores are going to be willing to do that? Do you think the industry is going to let that happen?
Well, at the moment, there are some labels that indicate that meat has been raised without antibiotics. In fact, the problem actually is that there are too many. When we sent our shoppers into the stores in the spring, we went to 136 stores, we found more than 20 different labels that had something about raised without antibiotics, no antibiotics, mm-hmm. antibiotic-free, many, many ways to say it, which is really kind of confusing to the consumer, especially since some of those labels are really not meaningful. For example, you can't trust natural.
Right. Absolutely.
Natural has nothing to do with how the animal was raised. It only has right. to do with what happens to the meat after it's slaughtered.
Really? You want to let's dissect that for a second. What do you mean by that?
Well, you could have a cow who was given hormones, who was given antibiotics, who was given the remains of pigs and chickens to eat.
Right.
And it could be called natural, because natural doesn't have anything to do with how it was raised.
Right.
It just means that after the animal is slaughtered, that they don't use coloring agents on it, on the meat.
Okay, that's I didn't realize that. Oh my God.
Right. Most people think natural is like organic. It
yeah,
is not.
It's totally not. I mean, I've always thought that natural didn't mean anything, but I didn't realize that it was really applying to the post-slaughter processing rather than what happens beforehand,
yeah.
which I think, you know, is obviously a very common mistake. So you guys want to standardize labeling in stores.
Yes.
And encourage more grocery store chains to drop meat that is antibiotic treated.
Yes. And there is generally no labeling on that meat. That's just meat.
Yeah.
It's when it is raised without antibiotics, usually it has some sort of label because the store is hoping to get at least some premium for it,
sure.
some price premium. Although, also when we did our survey, we found that those products are not that much more expensive than conventional meat.
No, I don't think so either.
You know, a little bit more, sometimes even a little bit less than the average price mm-hmm. we found.
So how the meat industry, when Representative Slaughter reintroduced her bill, which is the Preservation of Antibiotics for Medical Treatment Act, which is designed to end the routine use of antibiotics on healthy animals and curb the meat industry trade groups argued that antibiotics are stringently regulated and judiciously used, and that there is a lack of human health risks related to the judicious use of antibiotics in livestock production, and that antibiotics offer benefits to food animal production. Well, I think the benefits are pretty obvious, which is fewer animals get sick and they grow faster. So that's, we see that as a plus side for the industry. But when they say that there is a lack of human health risks, what science are they pointing to when they say that?
You know, it's hard to say. I think they're trying to say that people have that the science has not shown that there's some epidemic that results directly from antibiotic use on the farm. But it's one of those hard links to make, you know, just as it took a long time to link smoking to lung cancer. You know, when we have something like this turkey outbreak where there was a salmonella that was resistant to four different antibiotics.
Right. That was last year, a Cargill
last
plant
year,
in
yes.
ground turkey. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think 36 million pounds had to be recalled. Hundreds of people were in the hospital.
Yeah.
Well, I guess they can say that the resistant bacteria just kind of got there by accident out of the air.
They could say that.
They could say that.
They kind of did say that.
Right. But the scientific consensus is that when you're using antibiotics on the turkeys all the time, that it promotes the development of these strains.
Mm-hmm.
And that having them be resistant in this way makes it much more difficult to treat somebody who gets sick. So they're sick longer. They may even die. There was one death associated with that particular outbreak.
Yeah. Although Cargill got way out in front of that for once. First of all, they did great public relations around it in
right.
terms of informing consumers and withdrawing product from the market before, you know, tens of thousands of people got sick. And actually, I misspoke earlier. That Germany outbreak with the Sprouts was an E. coli 0157H7
yes.
outbreak. This was the Salmonella Heidelberg, which
right.
is one of these new antibiotic-resistant strains.
Right. And then there's another problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a bug like that Salmonella or the MRSA, which our hog farm worker picked up, and then she goes to a hospital, as she did, because she got pneumonia.
Right.
that's how it gets into a hospital setting. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a nurse comes and is treating her. The nurse picks it up and passes it on to the next room. And all of a sudden, the hospital has a MRSA problem.
Yeah, that's right. And it's very difficult to eradicate those problems. I mean, MRSA is by no means the only antibiotic-resistant disease that's passing around in hospitals. There's that C. difficile, which is an yes. intestinal ailment, which can basically kill you if you're old, and yes. that's totally and exclusively hospital related. So, I mean, in a way, we should, one of the things that the livestock industry does to defend themselves, and I think it is legitimate and realistic to point out that antibiotics are overused in this country in general.
Yes.
And that it's they claim, and this may or may not be true, but they claim that it is a small percentage of that livestock overuse represents a very small percentage of the overall problem.
That part is ridiculous.
Yay.
When they're using 80% of the antibiotics that are produced in this country,
right.
you can't say it's a small part of the problem.
Right, right.
And bacteria are promiscuous.
Mm.
They don't observe borders. They don't know where the edge of the farm is. Right. They don't know if somebody works on a farm or in a hospital or in a city. Nature has its ways. Things don't observe borders. Bugs come here from Asia. Bacteria travel around too extremely easily.
Yeah, sure. I mean, we have such an international, our food supply is global, for example, just yes. for starters. My guest last week was Doug Powell, who's a microbiologist at Kansas State University. And he was saying, he runs this fantastic blog called The Barf Blog.
Yes.
And
yes,
and he always includes international news about food outbreaks because, as he pointed out, our global food supply is international. We're getting supplies from all over the world. And each one of those countries that food comes in from has its own special brands of pathogens, right? So
right.
it's really difficult to control for that. We're going to have to, unfortunately, wrap it up in just a second, but there was one more question I wanted to bring up. When you and I were at that conference in May last spring, which was sort of for the national, you know, grocery, I forget who the organization was that put that thing on. But
Grocery Manufacturers of America.
Right.
Right.
Anyway, so they were, they had William Flynn, who is the chief sort of FDA trained veterinarian specialist, the guy who basically monitors this stuff. And he made this very long and complicated explanation about why they can't do what we're asking them to do, which is take antibiotics out of the food chain. Because when you withdraw one drug, then you put a bacterial load onto another drug, which makes that drug less likely to be effective. And basically what he was saying is that you can't just willy-nilly phase out all antibiotic use. You have to do it in some sort of staged operation. Well, how do you respond to that?
Well, it is true that if you just withdraw one, they'll probably use another. But that's why we say that they have to. That's why we're pushing for supermarkets to carry meat that are not raised with any antibiotics at all. Mm-hmm. They do it in organic. It can be done. We think that's the way to go, and that's how we'll reduce antibiotic use.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, boy, oh, boy, you've got your work cut out for you getting the industry to go along with that. Never mind the pharmaceuticals, who are going to lose millions and millions of dollars of revenue.
Yes, well, they will.
Yes, they will. Okay. And tell that to the shareholders, Jean.
Oh, they've got plenty of other products.
They do. They do indeed. And one last thing. Are they developing new antibiotics, or is that kind of at a static, you know, level? I mean, I don't see that there's a lot of research being done about developing new ones. What's your take on that?
We haven't seen new antibiotics coming along the way they did when they were first discovered. Perhaps it's because research dollars aren't going into it, but it may be that we've kind of exhausted this approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it may be that there aren't a lot of compounds out there lurking around, like penicillin, you know, which we found sure. as a bread mole. We may have really located all the ones that are useful to us, which makes it all the more important to protect these incredibly precious drugs
yeah.
that we have.
Absolutely. Well, we'll be talking about this again and again over the course of this year until we see some movement either on the part of the FDA or on the part of consumers and grocery stores. And Jean, I just want you to tell people one more time where they can find more information about this, where they can download their leaflets or their papers for Trader yes. Joe's and all that jazz.
Right. There, you can go to two places. One is notinmyfood.org, which is a consumers union website, and will have the most up-to-date information and background. You can also go to meatwithoutdrugs.org, if that's easier to remember.
Okay, great. And if they go to the consumers consumer union website, they'll be directed to one of those two places, right?
Yes.
You have links on your page, right?
You might have to search around a little, but it's notinmyfood.org or meatwithoutdrugs.org.
Right. Okay, well, Jean, thank you so much. And next week, folks, we'll be having the incredibly charming and wonderful Libby Summers, who's a fantastic cookbook author, food stylist, and just all-around good time. So I hope you'll join us next week with Libby Summers. This has been Straight No Chaser. I'm your host, Katie Kiefer, and we'll be seeing you next week. Thanks a lot for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.